say it like I've been here because I know I'm right. Aren't we blessed to have Jack this summer? Like, helping us out the music. A 30-year-old single guy gets invited to a wedding. He goes. He takes his mom as his plus one and lets several of his single dude bros tag along as crashers. No, wait. Actually, let me start over. A really nice woman gets invited to a wedding. She takes her 30-year-old still living at home bachelor son as her plus one, and he invites his other single dude bros to tag along as crashers. So they get to this wedding. I'm sure it's lovely. The story doesn't give us much detail, but we know that everyone got through the ceremony and into the reception happily enough. And by some point early in the evening, this party is popping. I mean, it is off the hook. There's drinking, there's dancing, there's ill-advised karaoke, maybe. I don't know. There's a live band and more drinking and more laughing and eating cake and bouquet throwing, maybe. And so much drinking. So I'm going to hit the pause button right here in the story. Although Matthew did a really great job already talking about this issue, it's important for me to let you know that I'm going to be talking about drinking alcohol this morning. And there will be places where I use drinking wine as a metaphor for doing joyful things. It's in a cultural and historical context, clearly. It's not meant to be taken literally, but it's important that I acknowledge that there are people in this congregation who are sober or are working on it, or maybe think working on it would be a good idea. Some who, for maybe some other reason, the idea of drinking and drunkenness does not elicit feelings of joy at all. That's valid, and I honor that. I don't drink either, but I'm just fine with you drinking if that brings you joy. There's nothing wrong with it when there's nothing wrong with it, and I hope we can all see through the imperfect metaphor to the deeper truth about finding and sustaining joy in whatever way it's helpful. Okay? Do we have an understanding? Resume play. So much drinking that they ran out of booze. They ran out of booze, and the family of the groom is freaking out, right? No one's ready for this party to stop. It's early. But it is the year 30 AD. I probably should have mentioned at the beginning this is a period piece. It's 30 AD, and no one has a booze procuring app on their iPhone. No one can just jump in their SUV and head over to Woodman's or Schnucks real quick before they close. So, what are they to do? The mom of this 30-year-old guy, who is a rabbi in training, by the way, total theology nerd, probably not real popular with the ladies, she gets this brilliant idea. She says, hey, everybody, don't freak out. We've got this covered. I brought my son. And you may not know this yet, but my son is God's gift to the world. No, really, he is. You don't even understand. And he, my boy right over here, he's going to fix this very big, very tragic problem. We do not know how much of the wine shortage was due to how much Mama had been drinking, but maybe, maybe it was a factor. So her son is like, well, who is this woman? Lady, you're so drunk. I don't have anything to do with this people. Nothing to see here. Meanwhile, his mom is gathering up all the servers, pointing out her son and saying, you see that handsome guy over there? He's amazing. He can fix anything. Get over there right now. No, really, do it. Whatever he tells you to do, do it. And so they walk over to the guy who's just standing there minding his own business, not looking for any trouble. And they just look at him and wait for instructions. Awkward. I feel like maybe the band went silent, like they always do in movies, right, when things take a dramatic turn at the party. All eyes on this one socially awkward dude that no one really knows well. So he says, okay, well, this was not in my plans for the evening, but apparently this is happening. So I don't know, how about you go around and collect empty bottles and take them to the kitchen? He might have been buying himself some time. So the servers do it. They take off and start collecting all these bottles. And the Wedding Crasher friends join to help them because that makes the story even more epic, right? So the nervous wait staff and the friends get all the bottles collected and stacked up in the kitchen. Okay, phase one complete. What now, boss? And the young rabbi is just like, fill them up with water. Yeah, maybe no one will notice. I mean, have you seen how drunk those people are? This could work, right? Well, probably not, but there is literally not one more drop of booze here, so what else are they gonna do? Pay no attention to the enormous plot hole into which someone, anyone from the wedding party or a family member of either newlywed could have just dropped an announcement. Hey, y'all have drunk us out of booze, but you've clearly had enough anyway, so party on. No, no one ever says this. Allegedly. Okay, let's just suspend disbelief and stay with the story because I promise you it's about to get weirder. You see, somewhere in between the filling up of the bottles with water and the student rabbi telling the staff to just say nothing and start serving it to the people, he has done something that nobody saw him do. I mean, we already had foreshadowing that his mom knew about this trick, right? They start pouring the water into the goblets of the guests, and it is not water anymore. It's really good wine. Not like watered down Mike's Hard Lemonade or Zima or something. We're talking real quality wine. So good that some fancy important person, whom apparently everyone thought was a fancy important person, starts publicly gushing about how usually they bust out the low quality liquor at the end of the party when everyone's already all sheets to the wind, but these people have saved the best for last because they know how to throw a real party. Mom is having the best I told you so moment of her life thus far. The friends think maybe they're drunker than they thought. And the 30-year-old rabbi, well, we're not exactly sure what he's thinking. Now, let me read to you how it was written in the King James Version of Christian scripture that I grew up hearing, just so you know I didn't make any of this up mostly. The Gospel of John, chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee. And the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine. Jesus saith unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. Jesus saith unto them, fill the water pots with water. And they filled them to the brim. And he saith unto them, draw out now, and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. And when the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and knew not whence it was, but the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom. And he saith unto him, every man at the beginning doth set forth the good wine, and when men have well drunk, then that which is worse. But thou hast kept the good wine until now. This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee and manifested forth his glory, and all his disciples believed on him. Thus ends the reading of the scripture. Oh, you bet they believed. That's some Penn and Teller, David Blaine, Chris Angel kind of belief right there. And to this day, we don't know how he did it or what made the people there believe that he had done it. But I have made up a reason that I really like about maybe why he did it. Let me tell you what I believe about this Jesus guy, because a lot of people believe a lot of things about Jesus, not all of it's very life-affirming. Those people are not in love with party Jesus who made the good wine. Those people might revere the pious Virgin Mary, but most definitely not party mom Mary, who told everybody that she not only knew her boy was a drink spiker, but she was in on it from the beginning. But this is what Jesus chose to do first. His very first act of ministry, to get the attention of the friends who became his disciples and followed him to his grave, and then even onto their own. He chose first to let them see him as a miracle worker by turning some water into wine so that the people could have a really great party. And let me tell you, it was not really a time for partying very hard for most of the people in the land where Jesus lived. There's another really popular and oft retold story about the life of Jesus in which he got really, really angry one time. Many of you probably know this one. He was so mad about the crooked bankers and the loan sharks who were preying upon the oppressed, some of them enslaved, nearly all of them poverty-stricken, people of his homeland who had been lied to about the kind of sacrifices that their God required. So mad that he walked right into the temple where the rich were exploiting the poor in the name of God, and he started kicking over their sales tables and calling them a brood of vipers. Remember that story? Well, that protest event was already percolating in his activist mind at this party, I believe, because you know when it happened? Next. It's the very next notable thing that Jesus did after his debut as the one to watch at the Cana wedding. According to John, his beloved, it was his second act of ministry, calling the rich and powerful a bunch of snakes and disrupting their business as usual with a few well-placed kicks and shoves. See, I read to you through verse 11 of the second chapter of John, and in verse 12, he sleeps it off and rests for a few days. And in verse 13, he heads to Jerusalem, where the next thing he does is break some furniture and make some enemies. So Jesus was for sure not living in a time of peace and love and joy when he decided that his first act of God was going to be helping people have a good time. It was right in the middle of a fierce fight for justice. It was right in the middle of the Jewish people being persecuted and lied to by the Roman government and being gaslighted and fed fake news right in the temple and in the public square. Jesus wasn't preaching a prosperity gospel or telling everyone if they just said affirmations and pulled themselves up by their bootstraps or tried a little harder, things would get better. He was no rose-colored glasses-wearing Pollyanna, that guy. But I believe he knew the secret of the oxygen mask. You know that thing the flight attendants always say when we're not really listening? The thing about how in case of an air pressure change in the cabin, the laws of nature do not care how much you love your kids or your grandma or your spouse or your canine companion. If you don't put on your own oxygen mask first, you're gonna pass out and be of no good to them. So do that self-care thing first, because it's really the opposite of selfish. Listen, the miracle of turning the water into wine has been commentaried to death by theologians across the spectrum of belief. There are a lot of deep thoughts as to what it all meant. You know, probably one of them's right, maybe. But no more right than this one thing that I know for sure. Joy matters. Your joy matters. Our collective joy, it matters. If joy ever matters more at one time than another, maybe it matters most when it's the most inconvenient thing to work toward. Maybe because we know that the time of table kicking is well upon us. We can know that the time to be uninhibited at the party maybe ought to come first sometimes. Maybe when Jesus said to his mom, "But my time has not come yet," she pulled him close and said, "Maybe it wasn't what you had planned, son, The world is happening around you anyway. And I'm worried about you. I know you. And I know you're not going to stay out of this mess while people are being harmed. But tonight, I'm here at the party with my beloved son. And Jesus, just be here now and have a good time with your mom, will ya? And so he did. And so can we. When our beloved nation is 184 days, but who's counting, into a regime that looks and acts a whole lot like fascism sometimes, and we wonder what we can do about it, when we're feeling resistance fatigue already and we can't even think about how many more days of this are left and what might happen next, maybe it's time to pause, just for now. And crank up the joyful music and be with the people you adore and have a really, really fun party. Just for now. The temple will be there when you are rested enough for the table kicking, I promise. But if your friends and your family are here right now, remember that this moment happens once. This moment. These are the things for which we rise up to power anyway, are they not? If we do not fight for our right to experience joy, then what's the point? The pursuit of happiness wasn't just a frivolous thing that sounded poetic to put into the Declaration of Independence. People have apparently always thought it was worthy of our greatest effort, even in this, our vastly imperfect union. So while nothing about this sermon is the deepest theological exposition of a miracle of Christ that anyone's ever going to hear, it's not about being right or deep or smart or spiritual. It's about knowing that sometimes the first order of business is to blow some minds with how much fun life can be when you suspend disbelief, leave your worries at the door, when it's time to fully surrender to joy. So may we try that more often. May we know for sure that we will be stronger for the fight ahead when first we surrender to joy. And then may we just do it already. Let's stand and sing together, shall we? Number 29 in your hymnals. Joyful, joyful, we adore thee. Sing it with joy, almost as if we don't have to scan the next line to make sure we agree with the theology. Sing together. Benediction by Heather Ryan Starr. May whatever gatherings or activities we engage in this Sunday afternoon help restore us, our connections to one another, our sense of hope, beauty, and fun in this world. Our deep knowing that we have to take care of ourselves and each other with love and joy if we are to soulfully survive the world's mayhem. Before we sing our final closing song, Doris wanted me to let you know, please come take some flowers before you leave. That's her joyful gift to us all. Let's sing our closing benediction together. We'll sing it through twice.